I do this for my culture, 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 culture.
Peace and welcome to For the Culture, right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me this evening. Folks, happy Tuesday. There we go. Happy Tuesday. Yes, yes, yes. Tonight, folks, we got a lot to talk about. I'm very excited about tonight's show. Tonight, we're going to be talking about the validity of vaccinations, folks. That's going to be the big conversation, the validity of vaccinations. We're going to be joined by some physicians Dr. Crystal Watkins, who is a psychiatrist and a professor at Shepherd Pratt Health and Johns Hopkins. We're going to be joined by Dr. Nicolette Martin, who is the National Health and Human Services Chair for the Lynx Incorporated. And we'll also have a conversation with Ms. Siobhan Arlene Bradley, who is the founding principal of Reach Beyond Solutions, and she also is the Health and Human Services Chair for the Eastern Area of the Lynx Incorporated. We're going to be talking to these sisters tonight about the validity of vaccination, the whole conversation about COVID-19 vaccinations, the impact that it has on the family, and of course, we'll give you an opportunity to join us for that big, big conversation. But before we get into that, I wanted to start the show off with an update about what has been happening in Washington because, you know, my producer Demi said it best when I came in and I was talking to her about how things are just unfolding in Washington. She was like, "What, you flabbergasted?" And I was like, "Yeah, that's the best word to describe it, flabbergasted." Let me just share with you very quickly. I mean, we're not going to go too deep into it. But, you know, you might have heard on the news break that they're moving forward with the trial, of course, and that the senators who are going to be a part of the proceedings were sworn in today. And one senator, Senator Rand Paul, the Republican out of Kentucky, his father is Ron Paul. He raised the question about the constitutional basis for the impeachment and the removal of a former president. His take was, quote, "Impeachment is for removal from office, and the accused here has already left office." He argued that adding that the trial would, quote, "drag our great country down into the gutter of rancor and vitriol, the likes of which has never been seen in our nation's history." Okay, Mr. Paul. Okay, Mr. Paul. So all that has happened, even up to January the 6th, something that I think a lot of us have never seen, that didn't happen? That this trial would be that thing. But January the 6th, okay. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, who is the majority leader, he killed that objection. But he prompted a vote in that situation. There were only 5 Republican senators who voted against Senator Rand Paul. They were Senator Susan Collins of Maine, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Mitt Romney of Utah, Ben Sasse of Nebraska, and Patrick Toomey of Pennsylvania. These were all the 5 Republicans that voted against Rand Paul. Senate Minority Leader now, Mitch McConnell, who had previously said that Trump had, quote unquote, provoked the Capitol mob, voted to back Rand Paul and President Trump. Now, he said this on the last day, I think it was January the 19th. He said that the president provoked the storming of the Capitol, that he should be responsible. This was on January 19th. What today? Today is January 26th, on 7 days later, folks. 7 days later, he's like, no, we're not going to punish the president. Here's how the impeachment situation would sit. If they convict the president, it would require 67 members of the 100-member body of Senate. If convicted, President Trump could be barred from holding future office with a subsequent majority vote. Rand Paul is looking to muster at least 34 votes to signal that there are enough senators with constitutional misgivings to secure an acquittal. After they did a little test vote, that's what they did. They call it like a little key vote, key test vote. After they did that today, Rand Paul said that the tally indicated that the impeachment trial is dead on arrival, that it is all, it's not going to happen. This is all happening today, folks. Before the vote, the Republican senators, they, according to the reports, they met with a law professor out of George Washington University. His name was Mr. Jonathan Turley. And Mr. Turley argued that a former president cannot be tried for impeachment because he's no longer in office. Okay. Got it. Understood. That's fine. So this is the big thing that the Republican senators are holding on to, the fact that, okay, Trump is no longer in office, therefore you can't impeach him and you can't convict him. There's no constitutional basis. Let's move on. This is the, I'm not making this up. This is the strategy. This is the thinking of Republican senators. One senator out of Wisconsin, Republican Ron Johnson, said he hoped that Tuesday's vote today would prompt Democrats to reassess if it was even worth having a trial. He said, quote, I hope my colleagues to look at it from this standpoint. Is it wise to do this? I would hope we would end this now. It's just not wise. It's not healing. It's divisive. Now, all that Trump has said, all the stuff that he has done. Now we're talking about what's divisive, what doesn't lead to healing. Like, I mean, seriously, all that, and I mean, not even just, okay, we only have to go that far, you know, 2 years back. Let's look at the past 6 months, all that he has done. Let's look at what has happened and what has been done since the November election. Over these past few weeks, has there been healing and unity among the president? But here's the response that Democrats have taken. Here's their stance. Their stance, it says that that if they don't go forward with this impeachment, not only does that signal that presidents can act with impunity late in their term, but they also are saying that the Constitution specifically notes that a consequence of a conviction includes the possibility that an impeached official can be barred from future office. They're fighting for, according to Senator Chuck Schumer, the majority leader, Senate majority leader, he said, quote, it makes no sense whatsoever that a president or any official could commit a heinous crime against our country and then defeat Congress's impeachment powers by simply resigning so as to avoid accountability and a vote to disqualify them from future office. They are talking about, now here's the two principles, accountability and stopping the possibility of Trump getting back into office, which he has already kind of sort of hinted at, that he would think about running for office in 2024. See? Chuck Schumer said, the theory that the Senate can't try former officials would amount to a constitutional get-out-of-jail-free card for any president who commits an impeachable offense. This is crazy. And this is very, very serious. This is very, very serious. So you on one side, you have some folks are saying the Constitution, because he's out of office at this point, that this whole impeachment is a moot point. Doesn't work. It's null and void. But then you have the other side where the Democrats are saying, regardless, you know, there is a precedent where an impeached individual who has resigned from office still was at least tried by the Senate for a conviction. Now, that trial led to an acquittal, but the fact is it happened. This happened back in the 1800s, 1876, with the former Secretary of War, William Belknap, when he resigned a couple of moments before the House was set to vote on his impeachment on corruption charges back in 1876. So there is some precedent, but it's just the principle of the matter, folks, of accountability, of you can't run away from the situation just simply because you resigned from office. Now, I know that for my Trump listeners and Trump supporters and those who may not, you know, you might be, oh, Faraj, you always talk about it. I'm talking about when you call me up, the first or the biggest thing that you often say, and I've heard Jane say this yesterday, last night, was talking about values. Where are the values and the argument for the Republicans? Where is the value of accountability? Where is the value of making sure that what Trump represents and his thinking and how he goes about doing his politics doesn't become a problem down the road or doesn't continue to happen where he can hold office again? Can you imagine that, folks? After all of this, the Republicans say, all right, we don't want this to happen. Boom, boom, boom. And they trying to push for an acquittal that come 2024. When Biden, Harris, either when they try to go run for re-election, here you go with President Trump. I mean, could you really imagine it? After all this country went through, we got to go back to this. So I wanted to bring this up because I thought, one, this is a big piece of a big development in this whole conversation, this whole story. But two, if we're talking about values, if we're talking about, I mean, if you have any hope in the American political system, and I look, we can't assume that just because you're black that you don't have no hope in it. There are a lot of black people that are still hopeful about this system. A lot of black people went out to vote. So if you voted, there is some hope there. Let me just say that again, folks. If you voted in this last presidential election, you voted because you have some hope that things would change. So, considering the record turnout of the vote, there are a lot of people who are hopeful that this country can turn a new corner. And with that, now we're looking at a situation of accountability. We're looking at a situation of making sure that that all that has been destroyed, the restoration of this system, or rather, trying to at least restore some parts of this system, because some parts of this system needs to be, you know, abolished. But just the simple fact that a person who becomes a destructive force, who becomes a divisive force, is at least penalized and suffers some consequences. Because at the end of the day, if it's all about values, what about the lives of those officers who lost their life in the Capitol riots? What about what about the fact of now, if you do have a president or any elected official that can act with impunity, and I'm with Chuck Schumer on this, if you can act with impunity toward the last few months of your term, that opens the door for a lot of madness. That really does. That really does. And I'm saying all this because some of you might be saying, well, why would you be concerned? Well, because one is that we still have to operate in this system. All right? Until something, a better alternative is formed. But two, it's how do we have these conversations going forward? This thing is we're all intertwined in this. Please don't believe that you can separate yourself from the great system called the United States of America. You could totally remove yourself unless you legitimately and literally like move out of the country and say, I will no longer be a citizen of this country. But if you are a citizen, if you pay your taxes, if you go to work and your labor adds to the economy of this state, of this city, of this state, of this country, you are a part of the system. If you look forward to getting paid every week or every 2 weeks, you are a part of the system. If you have received a stimulus check because of the fact that you paid taxes and because of, you know, where you are in your financial place, you are a part of this system. Let's just keep that real. But until we get and create something better that speaks to the interests of Black, Brown, Indigenous, and to whites with a creative system based on justice and equity, then this is the stuff that we're dealing with. All right, let me go to the line very quickly. We got Miss Linda. Miss Linda, talk to me. What's your take on this?
Hi there. Good evening, Faraji.
Good evening.
And may God bless you. And I'm going to suggest that you run for president real soon, okay?
No, ma'am, I can't. But, I'm not going to do that, Miss Linda.
Oh, okay. Well, no, anyhow, let me put it fair.
This ain't the time for that one.
And straight to the point. Number one, the restoration of integrity, the restoration of justice.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be restoration, restitution, and recovery to the land, the world that God created from Jump Street.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know how in the world do these people come and open their mouths and say, if he is convicted, why wouldn't he be? Hey, number one, and how you going to run for president in 2024 from behind bars? Because that's where the hell he going. Lord, forgive me. Look.
And somebody, look, right now, Miss Linda, right now, because of the protection that's given to him by the Republican Party, this ain't partisan politics. This is what it is. Donald Trump is Teflon Don right now.
No, well, let me tell you. Look, they've been showing the dogs in the White House.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, they got rid of the crazy pit bull, but now it's time to get rid of the fleas. So those people that was, you know, just as wicked and just as involved in the wickedness and the craziness as Donald Trump, they are going down too. The same ones that's trying to back him up, they may be in the same jailhouse, you know. So, you know, all I know
he
is
might
that
get pardoned
too.
He might be trying
they
to get pardoned.
And, you know, yeah. Well, I got a Savior, Almighty God, the Creator of all creations, who says that no. Baby, it's a new day. If you do the time, you're going to do the crime. I mean, if you do the crime, you're going to do the time.
Yeah.
And you will pay and give an account. God called and said that everybody must give an account to him, Almighty God.
There it is.
And baby, ain't no escape.
Hey, Miss Linda, I appreciate you.
You're paying high.
I know that's right. I got to let you go.
Right.
And I appreciate you as always. Thank
All
you
right.
so much for checking
Love
in.
You much.
Love you too,
All
Miss
right.
Linda. Thank you. I mean, folks, this is interesting. This is very interesting. Lamar checked in on my Facebook page, and you could do the same. He said, good evening, little brother. Here we go. If you listen to the lyrics of the indictment, it seemed to me as if he were still here. Remember, the South was forgiven for going against the will of the government during the Civil War. He said he was done when his Lamar, you said you were done. But then he said this further to add to that. He said the slick move was they— made the Dems, the Democrats, speaking of the Republicans, made the Democrats wait until after the inauguration while Trump was not president anymore. And now they can use that as an out for him not to be taken to court for a trial. They need to make a law to prevent a president from committing any type of crime and not be held accountable for that action. How do we hold them accountable? To hold him accountable is the real question. Do we storm the Capitol? Just kidding. But what do we do to fix this? Lamont, my brother, I appreciate you as always, brother. Thank you for checking in. That's the big question. How do we hold a president accountable if his own political party won't hold him accountable, won't convict him, won't try him? And there seems to be this view that we should just kind of, quote unquote, move on. Move on. And I mean, look at the injustice in that. Now, let me just share this for those of you who might say, well, Faraji, it doesn't matter, you know, it won't affect us. Yes, it does. Here's why. We're talking about the United States government. We're talking about the head of the country. We're talking about the most powerful government on the planet right now, right? Everything that is going on in our social, economic, political life, educational space comes down from this government. If the head ain't right, the body ain't right. I'm going to just say that again. If the head ain't right, the body won't be right. So how do you think that's going to trickle down? We don't know yet. But if there's a high level of injustice that occurs at the top, it's only a matter of time till we see it occurring, permeating all throughout the body, all throughout the system. Now, we know that there's corruption in the system. We know that there have been a lot of politicians that have gotten away with stuff and all of that. But when that continues to happen on this level, with this level of breach, with all of these things happening, what's going to happen? What's going to happen for the poor of this country who have to rely on the government for their sustainability? What's going to happen to the middle class of this country? Huh? Where a lot of us fall. You know what I mean? You can say I'm lower middle class or upper middle. You're in the middle. You working. You paying some bills, you got a little car, but you in the middle. You right there in that sandwich. What's going to happen if chaos ensues? What will happen? If the simple principle of accountability, justice, is not applied to a situation that blatantly shows that that there needs to be some correction. What's going to happen? That's the concern that I have. And it's a concern that affects not just white people. It affects every member of this country. Every race, every ethnicity, every people. It affects us all. Because when you have an injustice, just like my brother, the late, great Dr. King said, an injustice anywhere is an injustice where? Everywhere. And when you have this level of high injustice happening, whew, it's only a matter of time, folks. It's only a matter of time. Wanted to bring that to you. Want you to think about that. And, of course, we'll keep you posted on the latest developments around this situation. Folks, up next, we talk to the doctors. And let's talk about the validity of vaccinations. There's been so much conversation about whether vaccinations work, where they are, and most importantly, can they really be effective dealing with these new strands of COVID-19? We'll be talking to some powerful doctors about this. And, of course, we'll have you join us in the conversation. So stay riding with us. It's For the Culture on WEAA. We'll be right back.
Culture. I do this for my culture, 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 culture.
Peace and welcome back to For the Culture here on WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with us. Folks, we wanted to have a conversation about the validity of vaccinations. This is a big, big conversation, one that I have been wanting to have for some time now since the discussion around the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines really came out. Because I think it speaks volumes about where we are in terms of the state of the black health, of black health as it relates to COVID-19. And I'm so happy to be joined by two women, two powerful sisters that can at least give us some insight about where we are with this whole process. And more importantly, how do we move forward? Because there's a lot of information out there, but then there seems to be a lot of confusion as well. So I'm really, really excited to be have on the line with me, first and foremost, Dr. Crystal Watkins. Dr. Watkins is a psychiatrist and professor for Shepherd Pratt Health and Johns Hopkins. Dr. Watkins, thank you so much for joining us this evening. We're excited to have you. Dr. Watkins?
Yes.
Oh, okay. We got you. All right. Just making sure. Thank you so much for joining us. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hi. I just said I'm excited to be here tonight. I'm sorry.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And also joining us is a sister who is going to be moderating a conversation about the state of black health and COVID-19, along with the Links Incorporated. This is a special conversation that's going to be happening on Saturday, February the 13th. Ms. Siobhan Arlene Bradley. Dr. Siobhan is a founding principal for Reach Beyond Solutions. She's also the Health and Human Services Chair for the Eastern Area of the Links Incorporated. Dr. Siobhan, thank you so much for being with us.
It's great to be on tonight. How's everyone doing?
We're good. We're good. Thank you so much. Let's talk a little bit about this whole thing. First and foremost, I know that there has been a lot of conversations, Dr. Watkins and Dr. Siobhan, about the fact that we are in this kind of like vaccination space. Like we were going through a couple of phases, of course, here in the state of Maryland. We are now in the phase 1C, and there has been discussion about, you know, getting vaccines out there. What have you been hearing about vaccinations in terms of the distribution process? Dr. Watkins, I'll start with you. And seeing how this whole thing kind of is unfolding, especially now where the president, President Biden, has come to the sad reality that there was no real distribution plan for the vaccine left by the Trump administration.
I know. I think this is such a timely conversation for our community, not just the greater Maryland community, but minority communities. Anytime you talk about vaccinations and you talk about a new virus, I can imagine it makes some of us a little bit nervous. One of the things that's interesting about the COVID virus and the vaccines are that it seems like they have Maryland has a supply, they have a coordinated plan. There has been, a delay in trying to roll things out in order to get the most amount of vaccines to the most amount of people, and I think in trying to organize things. What my experience has been, and especially my experience with my patients, I am a geriatric psychiatrist, so most of my patients are over 65. My oldest patient is 100. And the biggest challenge that I've seen with the vaccine is just getting access to register to actually get the vaccine itself. Mm-hmm. I think President Biden and then Governor Hogan have the right idea in working as a collective at the national level, the state level, to just get as many people vaccinated as possible. I think the other thing that I'm so glad you have us on your show today, is giving information about, is the vaccine a good fit for you? Is it appropriate?
what are some of the fears and concerns that people have. And what I've seen in the past, I guess, 2 to 3 weeks, is a really coordinated effort across the state of Maryland. I mainly service Baltimore City and Baltimore County, and mm-hmm. I think those two health commissioners have done an outstanding job with trying to educate our community about why they need the vaccine, and then also providing access to everyone.
Arlene, Siobhan, I would like to get your thoughts on that as well, ma'am.
Absolutely. So in the work that I do is really in public health practice, and what we do in terms of engaging with health leaders across this country is, especially in the DMV area, we're finding this idea of distribution of vaccine has been the challenge. But beyond that, in different counties, the allotment has been a challenge as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there may be a specific need in a certain county, particularly in the state of Maryland, and other states that you see the same issue, when the allotment numbers do not align with the need. And as we're thinking about this, one of the things we want our community to understand, we have to ensure priority populations are listed. If your listeners are here, look at this text thing. It's a text access, MD Ready, MD, capital R, EADY. You can text this and get updated information from the state. I use it regularly. Public health practitioners have been using it to get information out to the community. And what they tell you is when your priority group comes up, so the 1As, the 1Bs, so those are healthcare workers, essential workers, then those over 75, and then the next group will be those that are over 65, also those with chronic conditions.
Mm.
And as you all know, our communities, we are really in those numbers in terms of highest prevalence or new cases of issues like chronic disease, diabetes, asthma, cancer, heart disease. So these are the communities that we want to make sure our patients are getting access to the vaccine.
So here's the big thing, because I know both of you sisters have heard the controversial and divergent stances that some Black folks have about this situation, particularly because of not just from the Tuskegee experiment, but from our overall relationship that the Black community has had with public health institutions, medical corporations like Pfizer and Moderna. There was a piece that came out in the New York Times just a couple of days ago on January the 22nd, and it was talking about how Pfizer, one of the makers of the current vaccine, executives successfully lobbied the FDA to change the vaccine's formal authorization language so that they can slip in an extra dose of the vaccine to make more money. Now, they plan to, according to this report, it says that Pfizer plans to count the surprise sixth dose towards its previous commitment of 200 million doses of COVID vaccine by the end of July, and therefore will be providing fewer vials than once expected for the United States. So they're doubling up on the doses, but providing fewer vials. When I read this story, it was like, oh, so is Operation Warp Speed about saving lives, or Operation Warp Speed about getting the money the quickest? And I'm saying for us within the community who already have some real, and I would say some valid sentiments about this vaccination, how should we process when we hear that the one of the top medical corporations like Pfizer is doing some underhanded things just for money? How can we trust that they're going to have our health and welfare in the best our health interest in their interest? How do we know that?
Well, this is Siobhan. I will say this: you can't know it 100%.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can say that about any vaccine, any company, any product, right?
Mm-hmm.
What I can say though is understanding what it took to actually go through the appropriate protocols, through FDA regulations. I can talk about the safety, but the intent of the company is really hard to say. And African Americans, we have to be vigilant, right? We know the history of our country. It is not only a historical conversation, it is a present-day conversation, but I would not want to give a false claim that I could answer that. I couldn't, but I can say we need to be vigilant and hold companies accountable if we find these things to be true, they need to be taken up with our federal government, with those entities that are responsible for overseeing these instances. But yeah. I would say I would not want that to hinder access to our communities to be able to get access to the vaccine. That would be my answer to that.
I think that's an excellent answer, Dr. Siobhan. And I just want to piggyback on that and say that I think the first thing is to just acknowledge that there is this distrust of public health officials with Black Americans and Brown Americans, and that goes back to our country's history. And again, you know, we know that corporations have their certain intent, but I'm here also to talk about facts. And I think part of the vaccine and the virus, I'm a scientist, so I want to talk about what I do know. I don't want to speculate.
Sure, please do. Give us the facts, Doc.
Right, but you hear these different messages, and it makes you pause for concern. And so the fact is that the vaccine itself, and again, I'm biased. I am African-American woman from Baltimore. I went to UMBC, and I'm a Meyerhoff graduate. And one of my Meyerhoff sisters actually helped to develop the vaccine. She's an African-American woman who works at the NIH, and she has, her name is Dr. Kimizzi Corbett. So there's a Black woman that's behind the development of both the technology that went into the Pfizer vaccine and the Moderna vaccine.
So,
the other thing is
yes,
that
ma'am.
We know with the pandemic, African-American, Black and Brown people are being impacted at a higher rate.
Sure.
So again, back to history, we don't have as much access to health care, and so then, you know, even if we get sick, our avenues to get treatment are different. But if we're talking about whether or not to get vaccinated, the other thing is that when you do get the virus, it impacts us a lot more. So knowing the facts of the vaccine, I have to say also, I got my second dose of the Moderna vaccine. Dr. Corbett had a trial and included several people in the African-American community and wanted to include people that look like us so that we could know that the vaccine is safe. And so, again, we have to answer all these questions and know know the pros and cons, but I think knowledge is power.
Yeah.
And, again, balancing the facts with those natural concerns that are based on history, health disparities, but then also nervousness about something that's new that's unknown.
And Dr. Watkins, very quickly, you know, when we're talking about the vaccine, like we know with the flu shot, there is some, you know, you're being injected with some level of the flu so that your body can build an immunity to that. And to make sure, I'm going to start there. Is that that's correct, right?
Right, exactly. So, And what happens with these two new vaccines, the reason why, you know, I have to praise, you know, Dr. Corbett, is that normally the flu vaccine is part of the entire virus. What she's been able to do with this new technology to help us, to protect us from a full-blown reaction to the vaccine, is she's basically taking a piece of that virus, almost like a snapshot. And so then it tricks the body into thinking that it's been exposed to the virus, but then it allows the body to actually mount an immune response.
So you're talking about COVID, the COVID vaccine.
The COVID vaccine. I'm talking about the COVID vaccine.
Yeah, so the COVID vaccine has a little bit of the COVID-19 virus.
Right. It has. So basically, we know ourselves. People have heard of DNA. DNA is what makes us unique. Viruses use RNA. And so these are a little bit different from the flu because they use the RNA picture that makes them unique. But the vaccines are able to stimulate our body's defense against disease without causing the sickness like we would normally would get with the flu. So you actually are likely to get fewer side effects from the COVID-19 virus based on science. Now, of course, you know, some people are sensitive, but based on the way that those vaccines have been developed, you're less likely to have a significant allergic response with the two new ones.
And I'm so happy that you brought that up, Doc, because I think a lot of people is trying to figure out, like, what is actually in the vaccine? Like, we generally have a sense of what's going on with the flu shot, but then with this COVID vaccine, I heard that they don't have any elements of the virus in it. It's more experimental. It's not the terminology that was used, but that vaccine does not include the actual virus itself. And that's what was said at the beginning of this process.
Yeah, that's correct. Just for context, because I want to make sure that it's being communicated in a way that.
Yes, ma'am. Please do.
Because it does not contain live virus. That's not what Dr. Watkins said. I want to make sure that.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. It does not contain. There is no.
Correct.
The virus is not in the vaccine.
Right.
Thank you.
Correct.
Okay. Okay, I'm and Dr. Siobhan, I appreciate you for bringing that up. And I'm not saying that Dr. Watkins, you did an excellent job in explaining it. I just wanted to make sure because that's another big point for folks. The last thing is, and we'll want to bring some callers in 410-319-8888. We've been listening to Dr. Fauci on this whole process, and again, I'm going back to something that he said. On January the 22nd, apparently there's been a lot of things happening just a couple of days ago. Uh-huh. But there was, he said that according to the new data, it showed that the COVID-19 vaccines currently on the market may not be as effective in guarding against new, more contagious strains of the coronavirus, giving, quote, as he said, all the more reason to vaccinate people faster. So explain that to me. Because I'm not understanding. If the vaccine aren't as effective against these new strains, then how does getting the vaccine faster going to help?
So there's a process that we call herd immunity.
Yes, ma'am.
Let's just kind of go back. Let's go step by step. In the context of getting the vaccine, what Dr. Watkins shared was that if you get the vaccine, your body creates what we call an immune response. It is not the live virus, but that immune response is preparing your body to fight off COVID strands that we know of. Just like the flu, just like any other virus, there are viruses that have multiple strands. I just want to make sure people understand that this is not a new phenomenon. Any kind of virus that there is not just one strand of any virus. So every year that flu vaccine, that's not the same flu vaccine from the previous year because there's multiple strands that come.
Okay.
So the more that we get vaccinated, the more our bodies are prepared to fight against a live virus that may infect a human body. And so the intention behind that is, he's right, we don't know, because there's multiple strands of COVID-19, and there's probably going to be more strands that come, because that's what viruses do. Viruses have multiple strands. They transmit from different hosts, which could be humans, which could be animals. This depends. Sometimes it's airborne, sometimes it's foodborne. But the more vaccine, that's why we push flu vaccines so much, because the more you're vaccinated, the likelier your body will have the understanding and the actual response to fight the actual virus. That's why the more you get vaccinated, the better it is for different strands. Now, will it fight the new strand? We don't know. We can't answer that. And because this virus is so new, we're still learning more about it. Think about it this way. Where we were in March, Brother Farazi, is
yes.
not where we are right now.
Right. No doubt. No doubt. I believe that wholeheartedly.
Yeah. Absolutely. So then that is because we didn't have any kind of vaccine. We weren't even wearing masks in the beginning. If you
right,
remember.
You're right, you're
so
right.
We have learned over the course of gaining access to public education, public health, surveillance, to say, okay, this virus is not only airborne, we have to be careful about how we engage in closed spaces, how particles are spread, and the vaccine does the same thing that flu vaccine does. It teaches your body to fight back anything that's foreign born into my host or my body.
And I think Dr.
Yes,
Siobhan
ma'am.
Also gave a point. Stopping a pandemic and stopping COVID-19 requires all tools available and everybody on board. So the vaccine is just one part of the fight for the virus. So the other steps are, just like we're thinking about, any other cold or flu or any other virus, wearing masks, social distancing, reducing your chance of being exposed to the virus or spreading it to others. So that's what the role that the vaccine's supposed to have. And in addition to these other things that we've been asked to do over almost the past year.
Folks, and Dr. Watkins, I appreciate you making that very clear. Even though, Doc, you and I both know the simple things of this whole process is still considered to be some of the hardest challenges for a lot of people, especially, in Baltimore City, around the state, and of course, across the country, where we're seeing the numbers are just astronomical. I did a little research, and I saw that in the United States of America, we are up to nearly 25 million in cases. Over 400,000 people, unfortunately, have lost their lives to this virus. But then the next country behind us is Brazil with 3 million. And then when you start looking at the map of the number of cases and infections in America compared to the rest of the world, it's almost literally like night and day. You know, in China, where they, you know, President Trump said, oh, this is a China virus, but they got less than 100,000 cases in China. Now, I don't know if those are legitimate numbers, but I'm just saying based on the numbers that we're privy to, less than 100,000 cases. And I'm like, well, how is that possible?
It's possible through public health measures, right? What shutting down open spaces, or I'm sorry, enclosed spaces.
Yeah.
Mask wearing. And let me, if you've traveled to Asia ever, mask wearing was a standard anyway in many Asian.
Right, that's what I've heard, Doc. That's what I heard. That's so, what I heard. You can't go up in Asia with no mask,
right?
Right, right.
But what we found was that mask wearing was done. If you look at a lot of outdoor spaces, you saw masks. But if you ate indoors, et cetera, those are places where you have particle spread. When you talk, you spit. I mean, these are some of the basic public health principles. The other thing is hand washing. Massive amount of hand washing as a standard, right? So if you put these into place, now we got sanitizer everywhere. Now we got social distancing everywhere. But that was not the American culture.
No, not at all.
That's not what we do. And Black culture, we eat just because. This is what we do. We talk, we engage. We're a fellowshipping kind of people. That's our culture.
Yes, absolutely.
And this is what we're asking. We're asking, this is why it's such a hard thing. We're asking people, this is life-saving. But we are saying change your way of life in order to save lives. It's a hard concept when it's your natural thing. To tell me not to be with my mother for Christmas was probably the most difficult thing in the world for me.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
72. It was no question.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So that's really what I would say. Many countries took the initiative to take some of those measures. And let's talk about the politics. I mean, the politics on how this was even announced or not announced, right? The limiting our heightened sense of awareness was intentional. So we have to be diligent and think about political, social, environmental factors that contributed to this. And yes, underlying racism, I'm going to call it, because some of that is that too.
Yeah, and I think Dr. Siobhan, a lot of it was just pure negligence. I think and denialism, as they call
denialism,
it, right? Just
real.
Being in a state, in a space where, oh, this is not real. And even to this day, we're almost 1 year in, and people still saying it's not real. And I'm saying to them, they died from something.
Right.
And we're not. And I think it's a real slap in the face, sisters.
It sure is.
When you try to deny something,
it sure is.
To people who have lost loved ones to this.
That's right.
You know, and you walking around and you say, oh, it's not real. But at the end of the day, I've lost a loved one to this. And I know a lot of other people have lost loved ones to this. And so please get out of my face trying to deny a reality. I don't know what rock you living under, but you know, it's like that is a slap in the face. I want to go get some calls in before we take our next pause real quick. Let's go to Mr. P. Mr. P, talk to me. What's your take on it, sir? As we talk to Dr. Crystal Watkins and Dr. Siobhan Arlene. Dr. Siobhan.
Arlene Bradley.
Siobhan Arlene Bradley. Mr. P, talk
doing?
To me. What's your take?
How you doing? How's everybody doing?
We're good.
Good tonight.
I haven't heard any evidence about the side effects of the vaccine on people with kidney problems, HIV, and heart conditions and preconditioned people out there. What information do the two doctors have? And it sounds like that they have different information, if they have any, about the side effects of the vaccine because of the trial that the pharmaceutical companies do. Who did they the trials on?
Yeah.
On people with sickness and stuff like that, or people that are healthy.
Yeah.
You know, but I wanted, the evidence in the vaccine is scary, you know, because of I've been COVID-free for the last year. And tested negative for the last year three times, but I'm still wary about getting the vaccine because of my HIV. I'm not afraid to say it.
Right, that's a good point.
It's very scary.
Hey, Mr. P, I appreciate you, brother. It's always good to hear from you. Dr. Watkins, can you speak to that? Can you first talk about the participation of black folks in the clinical trials and then can talk about the side effects?
Right, right. And I can get the statistics and numbers, but I think what Mr. P is saying is the same thing that we all have on our mind. You want to protect yourself against infection, and you're doing all these different things. But you also fear, like, the possible side effects from the vaccination.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is, you know, although all the evidence says that it's safe, things came out so quickly. There's this rapid development, and this is this new virus. And so what are the side effects? And am I at risk in some way or shape or form? So from what I understand, there are about nine companies that are trying to make the vaccine. The two that we hear about are Pfizer and Moderna because they are now FDA approved. And then there's a couple that are still in the works in what they call phase three trial.
Mm-hmm.
What they were trying to do, and this has been a challenge with any type of medication and vaccine development, is to get what they call a representative population, people that look like us, that are healthy, but then also have other conditions that will respond to the vaccine. So I know with both Moderna and Pfizer, they had a certain percentage of people, and they were trying to recruit more African Americans. And for a lot of the vaccines, they don't necessarily include people that have general illness because, you know, they want to study healthy people first. So, but this is the case with most of the vaccines. So I think with the Pfizer and Moderna, and I can double check the statistics, they had a generally representative population, but still less than what the general population would be. But they did include old people, younger people, African Americans, Latinos, and Native Americans in the trials.
And Dr. Watkins, very quickly, before we take this pause, in terms of we talk about the clinical trials, but I don't know if a lot of us, we really understand, like, what is that process? You know, what's required of that process? What's done with those individuals who go through that process? How do we learn about what's in that process?
Right, and so I have to, lean on Dr. Arlene Bradley for this. The interesting thing is that that could be a whole other conversation about what goes into it, but you start off, first of all, looking at phase one is just looking at the virus itself, understanding it. Then you have a certain phase where you test it on what they call non-human subjects, so animals in some respects. Then you go to a small group of people to look for any major side effects, like does it cause heart attack or stroke or diabetes?
Mm-hmm.
They find that it doesn't do that. Then they go to a larger group of people to look at safety. What's the dosage of the medicine? That's part of phase one and two. And then when they get to phase three, they have to have a certain number of people that have taken the vaccine for a significant amount of time to say that both it guards against the virus and it doesn't have significant side effects that it needs to be pulled off the shelf.
And I'm going to take my next pause, but I want to get your take on this, Dr. Watkins. And then Dr. Siobhan, I'll get you your take on this. But Dr. Watkins, would you recommend that more black, brown people go and become volunteers for clinical trials?
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to state my bias. So I'm a researcher and a scientist. So in addition to being a physician, I'm a neuroscientist and I study brain diseases.
Mm.
And my area of expertise is Alzheimer's.
Mm.
We know how Alzheimer's affects general population, but that's mainly done on white males. For instance, the same research was done in heart attacks. And so we find that white males present with heart attacks differently than African American men and women. So the more of us that are included in the research, the better that we can tailor these vaccines or medications to fit our needs, our DNA, and our community.
Fantastic. Sisters, I got to take a quick pause. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. Folks, we've been talking to Dr. Siobhan Arlene Bradley, Dr. Crystal Watkins. These are two dynamic black women to talk about the issue of COVID-19. Stay riding with us. It's For the Culture on WEAA.